We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Mully and Hall. Up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
We go heavy.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
The 3-0, ball four. Forces in the winning run, and the ball game is over. The Padres on a bases-loaded walk by Steve Cishek in the 10th inning have beaten the Chicago Cubs by a score of 9-8.
Well, it's a terrible loss. The idea that you could have picked up a complete game on the Cardinals and instead you let them take another day off the calendar, that's what's really damning about that. You wasted the return of Chris Bryant. You wasted a couple of homers from Jay Hay, too. And I got to tell you, you wasted an opportunity to stay ahead of the Brewers, who don't scare you as much without Yelich, let's be honest.
They don't. You're right.
You're going to play this team a lot, seven times here. But are you really going to be able to pick up four games while doing that?
Mully and Hall.
I think they're kind of kindred spirits in a sense.
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
You look at the Cubs' list of tough losses to take. It's a long one, and you don't know where this one fits. I don't think it's as bad as the Pennsylvania walk-offs. I think the back-to-back nights in Philly, that to me was the low point of the season. You had to recover from there. Last night, you still have a one-game lead over a team in the Brewers that you feel like might be done because of everything that they've had to absorb, and now they have to go on without Yelich. It's frustrating. It reminded you of what they haven't been and haven't had in the bullpen, and Cishek takes the blame for this because obviously he walked three hitters, and you know, Joe Maddon watching this, he didn't do this on purpose or for effect, but it underscored how limited his options are in the bullpen. Because who was better?
Mully and Hall.
It's a hell of a team.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Rough night for the Cubs last night. Fortunately, Steve Cishek put on the spot and doesn't get the job done and unfortunately walks in the winning run.
Boy, if you stayed up to watch that one, we're sorry you ruined your night's sleep and you wasted that and you have a bad morning this morning as a result. 1 a.m., right around 1 a.m., I think it was.
My God, that's
the end,
crazy. Huh?
Extra innings. Yeah, it was a long game.
That's a four-hour game or something like that?
Well, three hours, 50 minutes or so.
that's a long, arse game.
Extra innings will do that, and I think bullpen will do that to you.
Mully Manfred over here complaining about the pace of play.
Pace of play. I don't think that's what I'm complaining about. I just don't see how a man getting up at 3 in the morning is really going to be able to stay up till 1. That's my real
problem. I didn't stay up to watch every pitch. Catch up. We have our methods. We have our ways.
And we did.
But if you're a Cubs fan and you did stay up, and they would have won, it would have been worth it. You would have been happily going to work tired this morning because you felt like you picked up a game on the Cardinals. You are back and you have won two in a row now. But you go and you don't know where things stand, and you're worried about the bullpen, you're worried about starting pitching, you're worried about everything if you're a Cub fan.
Well, you're worried that it's just not there. That's what you worry about.
You're worried that this is one of those years.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you keep on getting bad news after bad news and bad loss after bad loss. And when we have to worry about where this ranks on the long list of Cubs losses, how bad it is, that tells you a lot because it's hard to categorize because there have been so many.
And again, you know, I don't know how many options Joe had. He kind of used everybody getting there before Cishek ended up. He gave up a single and two walks, and then no move. Let him stay. He's gonna goad the double play ball, and instead he walks in the run with four consecutive pitches, and it's very difficult to look at that and say that. And I mean, we have a texter accusing us of sensationalizing the fact that they're four games back because they play seven against them. You know, it's not easy to pick up four games.
Well, how is that sensationalized?
With 18 left.
How can you sensationalize math?
I don't know.
How can you actually exaggerate the mathematical reality that they have seven games left against the Cardinals, and they are now currently four games behind the Cardinals?
Generally speaking, and this is a general comment, it will take you a week. One game a week is realistic to think you can overcome. When you've run out of weeks.
You don't have 4 weeks left in the season,
Mully.
No, you do
not.
I'll give you a calendar if you want.
No, that is my point.
All right, that is your point. It's a good one.
And I think the fact that you play them would indicate that, okay, there is a chance. Where there is life, there is hope. Don't get me wrong. But it is not. You have to look at the entirety of the situation.
We got to remember
how you landed there. What?
These Cub fans are not used to seeing the team competitive every year. I mean, they made it look so easy 15-16, and now a couple years
there's
removed.
An element of that, Kevin, I think, in the expectations.
It's all new to Chicago baseball.
It's relatively new. And I also think that you have to keep this in mind when you're looking at, okay, people are saying, well, they're four games back and they have seven left for the Cardinals. All you got to do is sweep. Have you met Jack Flaherty?
There you go. He's going to pitch.
Are you familiar with that young man?
Yes.
He's having a Jake, or I'll put it in Cub context. He's having a Jake Arrieta-like second half of this season.
Mm.
When Jake Arrieta was dominant with the Cubs, when he had that year where he just couldn't be hit, that's what Jack Flaherty is to the Cardinals this year, the second half. He's responded at the All-Star break to whatever. You know, he did not have a great first half, but he's unhittable now.
And just so people understand, baseball is a very interesting sport, and there are all sorts of variations and things that can occur every time you throw a pitch. And if you are successful at the plate 3 out of 10 times, you're considered a really good player. If you are a team that can win at a 600%, 700%, it's extraordinary. You're a great team. You're going to lose games in baseball. It happens. You can't just say, oh, how many games are left? Well, they'll win the rest of them. That's all.
Yeah,
that's not really how it works.
No, you're not going to get – they have 18 left, and it would be very difficult to envision them winning how many.
Yeah, they're one ahead in the wild card, and the second wild card.
If you win 12 out of the 18, that's a pretty good finish, and yet you're still going to lose six of those.
Exactly.
Okay, this is like – it's not, fun with math with Mullen and Haw.
Yeah. 312-644-6767. Let's get to Paul. He's listening online. Good morning, Paul.
Morning, Paul.
Hey, good morning, guys. Enjoyed joining your show. It's my favorite topic, and I called originally about the Cubs, but then you went on to the Bears, but it's the same thing. You live by math, you die by math. And the death is usually quicker and worse than any accomplishments you ever had. So my background, introduced algorithmic trading to the Chicago Board of Trade. We wiped out floor trading when we knew Rahm Emanuel wanted to wipe it out.
Hmm.
We're very familiar with the algorithm. Now, for trading, there's 2,500 different ways to do a trade. An algorithm is only as good as for the variables for which it can account. So at the beginning, we were able to account for the math. There's 25 different ways to do a trade, but we weren't as successful as we wanted to be because we couldn't determine emotion. We couldn't determine how much heat a trader could take on a certain trade. It took us a couple of years, but we finally figured it out. Those algorithms worked pretty good. Now, those algorithms were developed not for us to adjust them, but for themselves to adjust to certain situations. So once the trade doesn't work twice, the algorithm actually changes itself. Baseball, when I hear some guys say, Kyle Schwarber bats 325 versus righties during the day, I gotta laugh. Does he face the same righty every day during the day? Does he face the same pitches? Well, you're not accounting for the variables. The variables are different. It makes for good discussion, but to use it as a final means to make determinations for strategic situations is baloney.
So apply this to last night. How are you applying this to last night?
I didn't watch the game. I'll be honest with you. I don't watch baseball anymore.
But the
well,
results.
I didn't see that one coming.
Okay. No, we book bets. All I want to see is the result.
Okay.
Right? I don't care what happened during the game.
Yeah.
So, and it's happening in football now. That Dan Weider, that comment about now they're averaging so much when they average so much at the beginning, that's the other teams adjusting to him. Their quote,
algorithms that was Dan Pompey.
Their brain. Yeah. Are adjusting to it. And a guy like P.T. Epstein and Jed Hoyer, never played the game. Poor Madden. They handcuffed the guy, making him put Hayward at leadoff because Schwarber at leadoff because the Mets said to do that. It killed a guy like Joe Madden. But you know what? I'll take a killing for $6 million a year, too. And that's what Joe did.
And Paul, I'll take an executive that has three World Series rings, even though he never played baseball.
Yeah, they have
just saying.
They've got their own computer and their own algorithms.
Algorithm says that, but Theo's pretty smart.
Yeah, I don't have any of the algorithm, but let me tell you something. If the Bears don't turn it around in Denver, a tough place to play, thin air, that the numbers say you got very little chance of making the playoffs.
Things were looking very grim.
0-2, the math against for a playoff possibility.
There you go.
Yeah, it's pretty much stacked against you.
That'll ruin your season.
And Molly, I'll say, he mentioned our conversation with Dan Pompey. The first nine games of Matt Nagy's tenure with the Bears, he averaged 29.8 points a game. The last nine have been 18.8 points a game. There's a disparity there. I'm not sure what he's getting at in terms of. Of course, teams have adjusted. That's the point. Well, now you're the Bears. You have to counter the adjustments.
Well, I think what's interesting is, and you write about it, and Dan talking about it, and I thought the most chilling comment that I heard was when we talked to Olin after the game, and he said that Lance Briggs made the point that when Matt Nagy got here, he had been a coordinator, an actual in-game coordinator, for what was it, half a season, right? So that's eight or nine games, basically, if you count their playoff game that they lost. And you know, he, in his opening news conference, he took the blame for that, felt that he had done a poor job after the tight end went out in that game. At any rate, you look at that. So you've got eight games, let's say nine games, and then you've got one season, which is 16 games. So you're talking about 24 or 25 games that teams can now go to and figure out exactly what he likes to do, how he likes to run his offense. You've got two different groups of personnel, but the same system.
Tendencies.
Is it possible that they are adjusting to him in a way that they couldn't in the first half of last season? And if that is the case, and again, you know, Fangio's a little bit different because he was with the guy and he knows a lot more of the tendencies by being in meetings. Now they know what Vic likes to do as well. So that's something you got to take into account.
It's more involved and it involves more things, but don't you look at the numbers and doesn't that suggest that that's happening? That's happened.
If you study the math of it, it's chilling.
It's about scoring points in the NFL.
It's about
scoring touchdowns.
And you're operating with limitations based on your kicker. So you're less likely to try to score points. Again, 51-yard field goal, you turn that option down because you're going to go for a 4th and 10.
You're not looking at the math there.
What does the math on that say?
It's almost.
Because the eyeball test is that the quarterback is failing all game long. Why the hell are you letting him try to do this? Kick the damn thing and close within a point.
The math says you are much better off trying a 51-yard field goal and succeeding than you will trying to convert on 4th and 10.
It's I just think that you don't want to let math ruin your impressions of what's going on in the world. But the fact of the matter is that reality does set in, and you know, we talk a lot of fantasy football and fantasy baseball. Make sure that you're doing it with a sober understanding of what's happening. There are 18 games left for the Cubs,
yes.
Right?
Seven against the Cardinals.
That's great, but you can't rely upon them to sweep the Cardinals in seven games.
I'm not sure it's so
and everything's
great.
Okay.
It's a pretty good team. You're playing the best team in your division seven more times.
Because the variables will say that it's just an impossibility.
You know what? It is great, but I think they'd rather play the Marlins.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
And the Cardinals have a much tougher schedule. We get that. That's why you can't afford to lose a game like you did last night. You just can't afford to lose it. Now, again, you can lose 1-4, but are they going to – they're 1-1 out there against a real crap team. You better get it together. You lose another one, the numbers get even worse. That's how it works.
Four games help. Back with 18 to go. You're still in the driver's seat for the second wild card team, but boy, it's going to be tough.
We'll bring Rich Campbell in. We'll talk some Bears with him. We'll find out if there have been some adjustments made and how much of an impact does the tight end make in this game? Is that what's been missing, and will that turn everything around come Vic Fangio Day? Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
When he had his touches, which was, I think was six of them, I thought he did well. He had that nice catch down the sideline. So it's hard for me because I want to watch the tape and truly see, all three of those guys. It's that part is new to us a little bit. And so we got to make sure that, again, we figure out how to get that thing right. And luckily, it is the first game of the year.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score. That is the voice of Matt Nagy. Let's get out to Rich Campbell. He covers the Bears for the Chicago Tribune and joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. Good morning, Mitch. How are you?
Morning, Rich.
I'm great, guys. It kind of feels like the vultures have just been circling and circling and circling. So we're at least the Bears get closer to Denver today. They begin practice for that game on Sunday.
And listen, I understand everybody's kind of picking apart that first game and reading too much into it, Rich, but listen, they scored 3 points. For the love of God, that is a disappointment no matter how you slice it up.
There's no question. I mean, I felt like that whole game, for Mitch especially, but really the whole offense, was a moment of truth. I mean, what were we going to see that first time the curtain lifted on the group? And it was discombobulated by Matt Nagy's admission. It was unbalanced. You know, he needed to call more runs. And I talked to Harry Hiestand, the offensive line coach, yesterday about their problems up front. And he said he felt like expectations for this season, this pressure and expectation to do well, really did not fit his guys well when things didn't start, when the game didn't start in a productive way, that they kind of lost their focus mentally about how to get out of that. These are all really negative signs.
That's troubling.
So they really have a lot to prove, needless to say, against Denver this week.
And I think Matt Nagy's at the top of that list, Rich. When you look at, I have to say, I was watching the Raiders on Monday night and saw Josh Jacobs get 23 carries, and I thought, that's how you use a rookie running back that you're committed to. And he talked yesterday about David Montgomery and having Davis and Cohen and almost too many options at his disposal. But how committed do you think the Bears will be to making David Montgomery the focal point of this running game on Sunday?
Well, I think they will be committed. And just to go back to the Packers game for a second, our reporting at the Tribune has revealed to us that the Bears had really planned for this Packers game to be heavily committed to the run. And Harry Hiestand yesterday alluded to the play calling and the run element did not go according to plan. And so the question is, why did Matt Nagy get away from their plan? I mean, if they had discussed and game planned and practiced all of these runs or at least incorporating the run into the balance that Trubisky, let's be honest, he needs, why did Nagy get away from it? I mean, I don't quite buy that he's a quarterback himself and he just wants to sling it a bunch, because they were fairly balanced last year. On first and 10, they ran the ninth most frequently in the NFL. So Nagy is willing to run, but what about that game, led him astray from that? I think Nagy was introspective. He was self-aware about this, that he screwed up, that he did not get this right. And I'm with you 100%, David, that Matt's strategic expertise and his play calling, all of that is sort of an open question as you take into account the 18 games that he has now called plays for this team.
Rich, when you talk about RPO and relying on Mitchell Trubisky to make the decision, do you have to kind of lock that out a little bit? Do you have to tell him, hey, we're running here, we're not going to throw, we're not going to throw to the tight end, we're going to actually try to get a yard in third and one?
I don't think Nagy will do that, because those plays and the triggers that force those certain decisions, they're just designed to make you correct. And it's based on numbers, and it's based on alignment at the line of scrimmage. So the whole point of it is, to get Mitch in a situation where he can't be wrong as long as he makes the correct decision. But what they will say is that if he feels indecisive, or if there's any type of gray area, whether he's reading the end and if he can't tell whether the end is crashing on the dive or the end has the responsibility of stopping Mitch on the keeper, they'll always tell him to give it. Just give it and then let things sort out at the line of scrimmage. Early in the game, on their scoring drive, which was admittedly short, six plays, 16 yards, they had three runs on that drive that were RPOs. So as Matt Nagy at the end of the game, Friday, said, hey, you got to take it easy on me a little bit. Some of these passes are RPOs where there's a run option. Well, it worked the other way, too. There were pass options that ended up being runs. And so, you know, whether they just tell Mitch, hey, keep it all the time, I don't necessarily think they need to go that far. They could call more design runs, but ultimately, you know, it's up to Matt, you know, spread the field, make sure that your passing game is enough of a threat to open this running lane, and it works the other way around too. And I just think that, yeah, you've got to probably get in a lane a little bit more than Nagy seems to want to in terms of spreading the ball around. And, you know, to the point of making Montgomery the focus, what's wrong with that? Like, do you need to appease Mike Davis? Do you need to appease some of these other receivers? I mean, you got to do what helps your quarterback. And to me, getting Montgomery as the focus, it helps your quarterback. It plays to the strength of your roster defensively, and it just makes all the sense in the world.
Rich, not to pick at the scab of coaching decisions, but there's one on defense, too, that I thought was interesting to hear explained. What did you make of yesterday? You got a chance to listen to the assistants and Deshae Thompson explained why Deion Bush was in the game in the fourth defensive series. It was just a predetermined thing that he would replace Ha Ha Clinton Dix. That's great and all to give a guy a reward for a good preseason. But the problem is that Aaron Rodgers recognizes everything. And when he sees a new player come into the game, you wonder to what degree he's going to target that new player. It just turned out that Deion Bush was on the wrong end of two of the biggest plays of the game for the Packers.
Yeah, and the irony is that Rodgers probably knows Ha Ha Clinton Dix, who Bush replaced, he knows him probably better than any Bears defender on the field. And given Clinton Dix's problems in Green Bay and some of the tackling issues and positioning issues that ultimately led the team to give up on him, I was a little bit surprised that they didn't go after Ha Ha earlier in the game. So the irony is, yeah, they finally went after that position when Clinton Dix was sitting out. That just is a really disappointing sequence for Bush, who, you know, the whole idea of training camp, right, is earn your opportunity, play well in the game situations. He did all that. And then when the lights were bright, the moment was too big. I mean, reading a wrong key, Townsend talked about that. Remember the fake end around and hit the 47-yard ball deep. Bush did not read the right key, did not read the tight end, that as soon as the tight end stays in, Bush has that deep half the field. Completely conceded the deep half of the field, and the ball was over the top of him. You know, the jump ball on the touchdown to Jimmy Graham, you know, as Townsend kind of joked that, you know, the good Lord didn't make Bush 6'5", and he made Graham 6'5". Okay, but yeah, the first one, the long ball where you've got to read a key, what do you do in that situation? You want as a coaching staff, you want to reward your guys. It's not like Clinton Dix is an all-pro and necessarily has the position locked down. And that decision just backfired terribly. And I wouldn't be surprised if that is the last we see of Deion Bush defensively.
When you start talking about Vic Fangio and the way that he puts his defense together, will his knowledge of the Bears aid him to a point where he can help stifle this thing again? Or do they know him well enough that they can kind of figure out what he likes to do in these situations and use it against him? Who has the advantage here? But the fact of the matter is that
they know him too.
They do. They have an idea.
Well, in this particular case, when we have so many questions still about Trubisky's ability to see the field and to work through a disguised coverage and to get from his first read in the progression on down to two and three, that's why I lean towards Vic in this particular match, because he can understanding, he's going to have a good understanding of what Mitch can see, what Mitch is comfortable in seeing, and some of the concepts that Mitch will be good at. Let's say he knows Mitch is comfortable. I'm just making this up here. He knows Mitch is comfortable against cover two, and he gets through some of those concepts very easily. Well, Vic can stay away from that and really make things difficult for Mitch to see. And we saw that in the Green Bay game, the way Mike Pettine had his linebackers over the center. He would drop those guys out into zones. They had their defensive line kind of walking around a little bit, and they were challenging the Bears' offensive line to identify things. That sack Blake Martinez had, the first one of the game, where he came untouched between Kyle Long and James Daniels. Harry Hiestand yesterday said that was a running back's issue. Mike Davis, the offensive line assumed Mike Davis recognized what they recognized up front and was going to pick up Martinez. Well, Davis slid to the right. Martinez got home untouched. So that's a combination of a new player in your system and communication problems that frankly, you can't have those. I mean, that's what practice is for, is to get rid of that kind of stuff. And so I think Vic is going to be all over that, and it's going to be really a test for Nagy. This is such a, from our standpoint, such a great storyline this week, because Nagy would have all of this stuff to prove as a play caller and strategist anyway, and now he's going up against a guy with whom he has no secrets.
I'm surprised.
So let's see it.
I'm surprised Harry Hiestand told you that about the running back. I'm surprised that Nagy has been as open about saying that Mitch Trubisky did not they had the RPO options. I was surprised that he laid the responsibility at the feet of Chris Tabor. This Bears team has been pretty candid in defeat in terms of whose fault things have been.
Yeah, I do.
Is that surprising?
Yeah. I think we've always heard from them about honest critiques when you lose, but that obviously the implication is it's internal. I'm with you. I think there is probably a healing process that maybe these particular guys feel like that helps with, you know, publicizing some of this. To me, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, the Deion Bush example is like, dude, this guy's a pro football player,
right?
You know, he's a grown man. Yeah, do your job. I mean, there's no reason to handle these guys with kit gloves, in my opinion. And maybe this is their way of establishing an elevated level of accountability. I mean, I'm never going to question their openness. It obviously helps our conversation, helps our understanding. But yeah, put it this way, I enjoyed talking to Harry yesterday, because I think there was a lot to get to, and there was a lot for us to understand about why things went so badly, particularly because on the flip side of this, guys, they talked so much about how good they were going to be and how much better they were. So they owe the audience an explanation. They owe the fans an explanation of why it didn't go that way.
Rich, thanks a ton. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Rich.
Have a great week, guys.
Just bad communication between me and the coaches and the sideline about who need to get in the game and what play we want and where we're going. So it was just sloppy overall execution by the offense, and we just got to clean it up for next week.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That's it. Just clean it up for next week. That's Mitchell Trubisky, and we're delighted to welcome in Michael Lombardi. He joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. Michael Lombardi is, of course, sports NFL insider, as always, our guy from radio.com. Insider calls brought to you by Indeed. Post a job today at indeed.com/hire. Radio.com sports, the place to go. And Michael, thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
Morning, Michael.
Oh, good morning to you guys. Hope all is well in Chicago.
Not quite. You know, they managed to score 3 points in their first outing, and I think
little anxiety.
You know, it's nice to hold an opponent to 10, but when you score 3 points, there's going to be a little civic panic, and we've heard everything from, you know, the quarterback can't play, and he's relied upon to make too many decisions, to the play caller. They've figured him out in the NFL. Everybody knows what he wants to do, to a lack of aggression, and obviously falling apart when it came to the running game and not playing a complimentary game with a great defense. What do you think?
Well, you know, look, I've been talking about Mitchell Trubisky on my podcast, the GM Shuffle, for a year now, you know, and I think that what Matt Nagy has done for Mitchell has been remarkable, because I think Mitchell is limited in what he does when he plays quarterback. I think the most revealing statement after the game was by Tremaine Williams when he said, as long as if we can make Trubisky play quarterback, we'll be okay. That's my line. That's been my line about Trubisky all along. I mean, this is a very good athlete. I think he can do, he's got a great arm. He's athletic. He can move. He can run with it. But there's a point where you've got to make throws from the pocket in tight windows, and you've got to throw the ball down the field. And right now the Bears are a horizontal offense and very limited throws down the field. And that's what they were last year. So they're going to have to work it out. I think Matt's going to have to figure out a way to where he can still do the things he wants to do with Mitchell, but he's also going to have to do some more things, at least explosively down the field.
Mike, I think Matt probably knows that. I think he understands the limitations maybe more than he'll ever publicly reveal. And I think that's the tricky part, is because how do you become an offense that gets the most out of your weapons with recognizing the fact and staying within those limitations that you see on tape? Isn't that the challenge going in to face Vic Fangio, a guy who knows your offense as well as any defensive coordinator in the league?
Yeah, I mean, look, Vic knows exactly what Mitchell can and can't do. He's been in those meetings, and I think Matt's done a great job of protecting the player. He really has. I mean, you know, he's done a tremendous job of trying to allow him to, not take the burden. He's been very positive, telling him he can handle more. Look, we know this. I mean, you know, the challenge has always been his volume for Mitchell Trubisky. I mean, it's been volume and throwing the ball down the field. I mean, he's a career 50% passer when he throws the ball over 10 yards. 50%. So as the ball expands down the field, his accuracy goes down. He's had 11 interceptions on throws over 10 yards, and he's had 11 touchdowns. So that's why when Bear fans are looking for more help with Trubisky, more down the field throws, Nagy knows when I throw this thing down the field, I open up myself to more problems. I mean, when he throws it between 20 and 30 yards, he's 32%. So we've got some real issues throwing it down. So what happens is Vic knows that most of the throws are going to be behind the line, and they're going to be between the 1 and 10 yards. He's got 360 throws under 10 yards. That's how you know how to defend him. That's why Amos, that's why those kids there, Sav, all those guys in Green Bay were sitting on routes. They know where the ball's going.
To that end, apparently NFL Next Gen Stats, the Bears, Trubisky, 4 of 18 on passes of 10 yards or more. And we heard the quarterback coach come out yesterday and say that two of those passes, two of them that were out of bounds, boy, that was close. And boy, that was good. And he's really going to start hitting those. I don't doubt what you're saying. I just don't understand, if that is the case, why not run the football a little bit more?
Well, I think the problem is now we get into how good is the offensive line? How good are they at tackle? How good are they at able to coming off the football? Look, they don't have, you know, the tight end situation. You know, people say just run the ball, right? Okay, that's easy. But, when you've got Trey Burton as your tight end, you're not running the football behind him. When you're an 11 personnel and you're tight end, now maybe Adam Shielan can be the blocker. He's 270 pounds. But, you know, it's hard to run the football without a lead back and without a tight end that can block. And Burton, for all his talents as a receiver, people treat Burton as a receiver, not a tight end. He's a matchup player. So what happened to the Rams in the Super Bowl is exactly what happens to the Bears on a weekly basis. People don't treat their tight ends as true wise. They treat them as receivers. And so, therefore, they dare you to run the football. They dare you to have to do it. That's where New England gains an advantage. New England doesn't line up and just run the football. New England lines up and says, okay, if you're going to play nickel against me, I'm going to run it because I can get two backs. I got a tight end that can block. If you want to play base against this, I'm going to throw it. It's really not a complicated game, but you have to have multidimensional players. They don't have a true run game. I mean, their offense is a little bit horizontal. I think when you study Kansas City and you think that Matt Nagy and Kansas City are running the same offense, they really aren't. They aren't, because they have to for lack of a better term, keep the volume of offense down so that Mitchell can handle it.
Mike, you study a lot of tape. You talk to a lot of people around the league. You've been around a long time. When you look at this Bears offense, 18 games into Matt Nagy's tenure with the Bears, what is its offensive identity? And what do they do better than anything else?
That's a great, great question, right? You have to have Dan Henning told me this years ago, and people probably listening to this don't even remember who the hell Dan Henning was. But Dan Henning was one of the real great offensive coordinators in pro football, and he was with the Redskins during their heyday. And he said to me one time, he said, you know, if you don't have any tendencies, you can't be any good. And he was so right, right? You got to know that what you're doing. And I think the Bears try to dupe people into thinking. I think Matt's in a really tough spot because he's got so much invested in the quarterback. And he's got so much invested in, you know, they take this quarterback over Deshaun Watson. They take this quarterback over Patrick Mahomes. I mean, they take this quarterback over everybody. And yet he's not, if you redraft that draft, it's not the same. So he's got so much in it. He's got to try to make it work, and he's searching for things. And what happens when you search for things, you end up not being great at anything, and you don't have an identity. And I think that's what he really needs. He really needs to be under center more in a play-action scheme, a little Jared Goff-ish. I mean, look, Jared Goff is not a $125 million value quarterback. Sean McVay's put him in the right system at the right scheme that allows him to utilize his skill set.
It's fascinating to look at the first week of the season, and you see teams like the Falcons and the Steelers and the Bears, and I guess to an extent the Browns. Maybe there was more hype there than reality. But teams that people thought very highly of that kind of had duds on the opening week. I don't know that that carries over. I don't know that teams can't rally from that. But those would be the ones you'd start looking at, right?
Yeah, well, I think this, look, you can't overreact to week one, but here's where it's concerning for Chicago, is you know the problem. You scored 15 points against the Eagles. Mm. People have a way of defending you, and if you don't have an answer for it, it's a little bit like in basketball. If you drive with your right hand, you're going to have to figure out an offseason to get a left hand, because once you start the year and you still drive to your right hand, you're not going to get those right-handed shots off anymore. Well, it's the same thing with offensive football. People have spent time studying you in the offseason, and they're forcing you to play a different way. And game one is the example. This game here, this tape here, when Chicago goes to Denver, this tape will be the most watched tape by anybody who plays the Bears for the next year and a half, for as long as Trubisky's the quarterback, because they know that Vic knows Trubisky. They know that Vic knows Nagy. And what Vic tries to do to their protections, what Vic tries to do to Trubisky, is exactly what everybody else is going to do, because we're in a copycat league. And so that's why, even though it's just game one and people say don't overreact, it's game one, but it's through a lot of study.
Mike, knowing Bill Belichick and the Patriots organization as well as you do, how do you predict they'll react to the latest in the Antonio Brown saga with the civil lawsuit making the sexual assault allegations public? And now you wonder, what did the Patriots know, and when did they know it?
Well, I think, like anything, I think Belichick's going to never begin with the end in mind. I think he's going to collect the data to see exactly. I saw that Brown put out a very strong statement proclaiming his innocence, and in this country there is due process. So I think that's probably what's going to have to happen. I think a lot of us reacted to the Tyreek Hill situation, including myself, and then the commissioner didn't do anything to suspend him because he went through the due process, and I think that's Belichick's going to be his modus operandi.
What, Tyreek Hill expected to miss 4 to 6 weeks. How does that affect them, and do they have enough weapons to get through that?
Well, they've got enough weapons. I mean, look, they can throw it down the field. The difference between the Bears' offense and the Chiefs' offense is the quarterback. I mean, this quarterback can make every throw. This quarterback, you know, you've got to defend every single blade of grass on the field, horizontally and vertically. That's a challenge. And then Hardeman comes in, Sammy Watkins comes in, Kelsey is a big receiver. How do you want to play him? If you want to play him in nickel, they're going to run you out of it. If you want to play him, you can't play base against them because they have a matchup that's going to win in their favor. So, you know, this offense is so dynamic. And even though they don't have Tyreek Hill, it becomes a little easier to defend, but it's still challenging.
Most surprising thing to me in week one, Mike, might have been Lamar Jackson being as efficient as he was for the Ravens. Is that sustainable? And if that wasn't your biggest surprise, what was it?
You know, that wasn't my surprise, and here's why. My son, who coaches with the Miami Dolphins, unfortunately, last week, he was at Louisville with Lamar Jackson. So I've watched, you know, I watched Louisville a lot, to say the least, in practice and in games. And Lamar Jackson as a freshman, I thought, was just a really good athlete. But I always wanted the other quarterback to go in because at least he could run the offense. And then at the Music City Bowl game against Texas A&M, Lamar Jackson came out and all of a sudden threw the ball like you couldn't believe it. It became a different player. And I think that
that year from his freshman to his sophomore year was a tremendous transition for Lamar Jackson. And I think that's what we're seeing a little bit right here. He's improving in the passing game. Is he going to be completely a dynamic passer? I'm not sure of that, but he's a dynamic athlete, and he looked like Michael Vick out there. And I think he's going to be really hard to defend. And the question that I would say is, if you were the Arizona Cardinals and you're watching Lamar Jackson in week one, if you would have just picked Lamar Jackson at 10 instead of Josh Rosen, you wouldn't have had to pick Kyler Murray in the first round.
Wow.
Hey, Mike, I laughed when I saw that Demaryius Thomas is being traded to the Jets, because there was a note there that Bill Belichick, you know, of course, famously traded from the Jets. He's now made a deal with every NFL team over his 19 years. Apparently, the Jets were the last holdout. So getting Demaryius Thomas there means that Bill has made at least one trade with every team in the league during his tenure in New England.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, that's good for Demaryius. He gets reunited with Adam Gase, who had him in Denver, you know, and he can come in and play, because based on where they are in New England right now with their receivers, what people don't seem to understand, Antonio Brown replaced Gronk. That's where he's going to, because Brady wants to throw the ball in the middle of the field, between the numbers. That's where Brady lives in terms of his success, between the numbers. And when he had Gronk, when he has James White and Edelman, he always needs three players to attack the middle of the field. When he didn't have Gronk, now he struggled that, even though it didn't look like it last week against Pittsburgh. But now with Brown, Edelman, James White / Sonny Michel, they have three players that can attack the middle of the field.
All righty. Sounds great, Michael. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
That was Radio.com Sports NFL Insider Michael Lombardi. Insider calls brought to you by Indeed. Post a job today at Indeed.com/hire. Thank you, Michael.
Sorry, Bears fans. That guy knows football.
That guy knows tons of football, and he apparently was right. Is that what I just heard from him?
Well, he's...
What do you make about a guy saying, you know, those deep throws that went out of bounds were actually really great, and that was...
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
No, he raises a lot of good questions, and he understands what he's watching. And, his analysis of the Bears' offense right now, lacking in identity, lacking consistency, lacking good quarterback play, all unfortunately spot on.
Found out, is that right? All right, let's not get over. Oh, I don't know what we'll get.
Let's go back to the Cubs.
Let's go back to the Cubs. Let's go back to something happy.
Cubbies.
Nico Horner.
Nico.
And Jim Callis will join us next, Mr. Baseball America. We'll get a chance to talk to Jim about what he sees from Nico, what his comparison is, if it's not Ryne Sandberg, and we can talk to him about a couple of the Sox prospects. I don't know if you saw, but Andrew Vaughn was in town yesterday. He was on the broadcast interview.
Yeah. Nice to see him.
Good to see him in town. And
should have batted sixth.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see him get to the Major League Club. Does that stop the J.D. Martinez trade? I don't think so. It's not a trade. It's free agency. So spend as much money as you have. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.